Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Well, grab yourself a drink. It is time for some Path of Exile 2 discussion.
There you go. We'll just have it three times then. I'll put that at the beginning instead. That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, it's interesting. I saw you talking about the six portal stuff. It's like I'm writing a video at the moment about sort of my thoughts, my general attitudes on PoE 2 so far. And it's one of those things where PoE 1, six portals causes so many problems on bosses, but not having them also causes problems. And I actually think the real problem is not that they decided to go with one portal. The real problem is that they've made another design choice that interacts with that. Ooh. That other design choice is that drop rates from bosses are very high and each attempt to get is hard to get to.
Mm-hmm. Almost all my good loot has come from bosses. Almost all of my high tier waystones also come from bosses. So when I die before reaching a boss, or I just don't get to kill a boss in a map, oh, it feels like I've been set back a tremendous amount. And a Citadel is even worse because I feel like I might not be able to fight the Arbiter of Ash, and that's just disappointing to me.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things where we have this PoE1 brain where we're trying to advance really fast because that's the optimal thing to do in PoE1, and I'm just not sure that that's optimal here. Mm-hmm. But everyone does it because it's what we're used to doing.
Do you think they designed this as a different sort of curve when it comes to progression? We're used to fighting like, man, my typical run isn't the same as Ben's or probably even yours getting to the Searing Exarch and Eater of Worlds. It's much longer, but I've invested, we just looked on my character, my monk, 3 days, 16 hours on it already. I know I'd already have fought the Searing Exarch, Maven, all those people. Probably no Ubers, but at least those core pinnacle bosses. The tier zero versions of them. And on this, I fought the Citadel, a one Citadel boss, a single time. Do you think that's their intent with this? Or do you think it's just, it was their first go at it?
So here's another way to put that. When you were a brand new PoE 1 player, how long did it take you to go from never having installed the game to having defeated whatever was pinnacle content, or like whatever was sort of a tier below pinnacle content at the time? Like, for instance, if you started when the end game boss was the Shaper, how long did it take you to get to the Phoenix?
Yeah, that's a good point. I started in 3.8 Blight. I played through, it probably took me 60 hours to get through the campaign on a completely self-made build. I got to endgame right as ExileCon hit. I actually watched one of your videos. You were the first person I watched during your ExileCon coverage. And I restarted in 3.9, of course. And that's when I actually tackled all the endgame content for the first time. So it was that unique era wherein a lot of people were tackling Cirrus and the rest of the Conquerors for the first time alongside myself. But I feel like my progression was actually pretty darn good that time. I'd say it probably took me 50 to 60 hours to down T8 Awakener, Cirrus. But it was, I still think the game was very different. This is, I had already played on a Witch and knew what the game was like. This is still a very new game, even though it has a lot of those classic Path of Exile traits contained within it.
Yeah, I think the key thing is that like when you were brand new to Path of Exile, you were saying it took you 50, 60 hours to get through to the end of Act 10. Yeah. And that's sort of nowadays you're looking at, you're a bit more experienced than that, but you're 90 hours in and you've gotten through Act 6 and you've gotten, you know, solidly into endgame, but not to the point of doing pinnacle bosses. I don't actually think that's all that different to your 3.8 experience. Because I think it's reasonable to say that in 3.8, you were not yet a skilled player of the game. And I think that that's the case for everyone in PoE 2, but we're judging ourselves as though we're veterans. Right. Because we're very familiar with PoE 1.
Right. And even that second character playthrough, which I've gone through a little bit on a warrior, I'm already zooming through the campaign. Where in that first run through, and we all know it, the Drowned City, we're like, oh my god, this is every league, this is going to be the new Val City. Okay, we're going to spend 2 hours in just the Drowned City map. But already I'm going through it a lot quicker, and I'm noticing all these different patterns, and I know who to kill, where to go, what to get, and I already know how to build my character too. I know what meshes together. Have you felt that yet, or are you still on character number one?
I'm about to do a second character, but I think like there's this perception that people that do YouTube-related content for Path of Exile play the game an enormous amount. I feel like I played more when I was working 9 to 5 in aviation technical records than I do now. because I've just spent so much time writing guides and stuff like that.
Well, I'm curious, Sir Gog. So a lot of people are actually wondering, do you just love math? Do you do math in your professional work? Because a lot of the content that you create is very maths related and statistical, and it requires a lot of analysis and a lot of, not crowdfunding, but a lot of people gathering a lot of data. And then you do such a great job of putting it into a presentation format and educating people. So is that just something you love to do, or is it something that relates to your professional work?
So I have a maths background. Going back to high school, I was involved in the International Maths Olympiad back 98-99. And then after that, sort of continued with maths through uni, but not at the level of becoming an academic. Okay. I think I just burned out on academia during my 20s and decided, no, this is not for me. But I think there's this thing where partly intentional misuse of stats by bad actors infuriates me. And that comes up a lot. And then at the same time, you get a lot of things where people aren't intentionally misusing stats, but it also kind of irks me. Mm-hmm. So there's this sense that I'll have where I'm like, I want to try and clarify things. Like, can you actually make a claim about something reasonably? And it's worth saying that with a lot of the big crowdsource projects that have been done, some of them I was central to, like the drop rate of the div card from, like the one I was most central to was the drop rate of the div card for fracturing orbs in POE1. That was where I organized more than 20,000 maps and did all of the data sort of compilation for that. But most of the rest I'm reporting on things that I've been a moderate scale participant in. The other thing I was pretty instrumental to was when we later reverse engineered the whole drop tables of div cards in POE1.
I remember that. It's the prohibited library, that Discord, that primarily does a lot of that stuff, and you work with them on it?
Yeah. And so, like, I've got a project that I've sort of started there that, like, kind of needs a bit more attention, but it's on exactly the Valorb, what I term the Krangle Divine outcome, where what I suspect is going on is that firstly, one of the Vile Orb outcomes, firstly, it applies a Divine Orb to your unique item. This is only for uniques. Then it scales each numerical modifier independently by a factor from 0.78 to 1.22. But we're looking for some evidence that that's right.
Yeah. And was that something you guys realized pretty quickly in PoE2 that something odd was going on with corrupting of unique items? I remember watching your first video on it, and it's you saying, oh my gosh, you're like divining these unique items. That's one of the outcomes. That's so crazy and powerful, right?
It is very strong, yeah. So it was interesting in that my first impressions were wrong on that. I thought that it didn't divine the item first, that it just scaled it by 22%. And then Waggle got on video evidence that it was also divining it, because he put a Widow Hail, a low-rolled Widow Hail, he valed it, and it Krangle divined to quite a high roll, and it was more than 22% more than the original number. Then I started thinking, okay, let's look at some of the items that have unusual mods on them. And so Enfolded Dawn was the first one that came to mind. I think that's the name of the item, the 100 Spirit Chest, and it's always 100. There's no roll range on it. And then that made me think of Calm's Heart. And Calm's Heart, I highly recommend people have a look at the life rolls that are available on that when it's corrupted, because they tell a lot. Calm's Heart is the thing that has provided the most information on how Krangle divining works.
Okay. Is it because of the massive variances there on it in PoE2? Or
Also, in PoE2, the life roll is always 1,000.
Oh, it's always 1,000. Oh my gosh.
But when you Krangle Divine it, it can be 1,220, it can be 1,210, it can be 1,200, but it can't be anything in between. So it is not possible to get 1,207 as an outcome. You will either get 1,210 or 1,200. And so that was where I formulated my current hypothesis. Key thing is that we can't actually say it's proven yet. And there's a bunch of coordinated valing of Lifesprig, just being very careful to rule out any reporting bias by getting people not to just go and report and val 50 Lifesprigs without saying anything, then report the results, because that tends to bias it towards people only reporting the ones that they think are interesting. We want the ones that are boring as well. And so for that reason, we're getting people to say in advance, I'm doing this.
Ah, that makes total sense. Thank you for educating me, someone who is not a maths person on this experimental process here. And since we're talking about Val Orb corruption and generally all things Val related, do you want to touch at all upon what has happened the past few days? The whole Val Orb controversy, the duping bug, and what was just actually fixed regarding the trial of...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The Sekhama? And
yeah, okay, so Temporalis. I'll be clear that I don't have full reproduction information on the exploit. I have seen there are videos that people have done. I deliberately didn't put quite enough information into the video
definitely
to reproduce the exploit, but to give people a sense. What was happening was that people were able to start a Trial of the Sekhma run that was with the Temporalis Relic, but without consuming the Temporalis Relic. Or more precisely, the Temporalis Relic was consumed, but then you rolled back the instance to a state where it hadn't yet been consumed. And this meant that the Temporalis was essentially not the actual item, but the relic that was used to run it was able to be duped. This has happened on a big scale. It's probably the single worst economy exploit that either Path of Exile game has ever seen.
Really? Dang it, dog, you just took one of my future questions.
And also on top of that, I believe there's pretty strong evidence that a bunch of, like, basically Val Orbs could be rigged by rolling back instances to before. Like, essentially, it was like you had a time machine. And so, in a way, it's like, imagine that you had a whole bunch of Hinakora's locks, if you want to use Path of Exile 1 terminology. Okay. Imagine you had an enormous stash pile of Hinakora's locks, and you could just use them over and over again on your Ingenuity belts until you're happy with the result.
That's ridiculous. And for PoE2 only players, Hinakora's locks allows you to see the outcome of a crafting result on the item before you confirm said outcome. So that's essentially what this exploit was allowing players to do. And if anybody was wondering what that hotfix was earlier today, that was disallowing people from making new instances of the Trial of the Sekhma. That's exactly what it was trying to solve. The duplicating of these uber powerful, uber rare. I don't know if rare is the right term, but just hard to get because you have to do the no hit run in Trial of the Sekhma. And that's basically what it patched out today.
What was being duped was not the success at the run. It was that you could make additional attempts at the no-hit run. Not even just one per relic. You could make, like, if you got a relic, you could just use it an unlimited amount of times. So you still needed the capacity to execute the no-hit run. But a whole bunch of people that are no-hit runners are going to get permabans over this. And they'll get permabans for PoE 1 and 2 as well.
Totally deserved.
End up being something that will have quite an impact even on original sin in PoE 1, I reckon.
Oh, most definitely. I didn't understand. Okay, so people were essentially just creating like 50 instances and then zooming through all these instances and getting a bunch of temporalises essentially on a successful run.
And let's say you only complete 15 of them successfully. Well, that's fine. Whereas, like, previously, the relic, I think, before this exploit was, like, 65% the price of the actual item. So if you were a 75% success rate on Temporalis runs, then you'd be making currency out of doing it. If you were 50%, you'd be losing currency by attempting it. Whereas with this exploit, if you were 30%, you were still spending nothing each time you tried it, just a bit of time.
100%. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And people are bringing this up in the chat. Just to be devil's advocate, do you think Grinding Gear Games is going to ban people on this? One, because it's early access and there's going to be a ton of crazy bugs that occur. And two, maybe the use of it was so widespread that this would be banning a substantial chunk of the population. Now, I know my opinion, but what's yours on this?
It's going to be a tiny number of players. This is going to be dozens of people. And yes, they have a long history of permabanning for things like this. And it will not be you are banned, but you're allowed to make a new account in the future. It'll be, we will use everything. We will add everything that we know about you to an internal blacklist of people who are never to be allowed back into the game. Same as people that do credit card fraud on GGG. They get blacklisted as well. They'll be on the same blacklist as the people at credit card fraud, GGG, or the people that make death threats to staff.
Right.
Those sorts of people. If you've been doing this exploit, you're gone. You're in that list.
I clap. The full force of the New Zealand military. It's going to come down on you. It's going to say, you are out of here. You're done. No more Path of Exile 2 for you. Better luck next life. But man, you stole my question. I was going to ask, what is the craziest exploit in the economy that you've ever seen? But this one you think is so crazy that it is the craziest you've seen in all your time in Path of Exile 1. Now, do you think that it merits a league reset or a new economy in the game this early into the early access date? We're a month in. The next content update's probably going to hit, I'd say, March. I think some people are saying February, but if they're going to launch a new PoE 1 league in February, I don't see a new PoE 2 update hitting until like late March. You think we should restart things or add a new league for people who want to engage with the economy in a good faith way?
So I think that there's a couple of different things to mention here. I think the best solution is to up the drop rate of the Temporalis relic now so that it is the relic, not the actual complete item, but the relic itself. Raise that to the drop rate that's the same as the, I think it's called Against the Darkness, the Watcher's Eye sort of vague equivalent jewel.
I got that one.
I think if you were to temporarily up the drop rate of the Temporalis relic to that point, that will undo a lot of the damage the exploit's done, in the sense that it will still be, like, you'll still be able to get Temporalis. It was always skill-gated, so it'll still be skill-gated. And, you know, it's a ridiculously hard challenge. I've certainly never done a no-hit run of the Sanctum. In either, and I think it's easier in PoE 1 than PoE 2, and it's, like, it's really hard in PoE 1 as well.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, I would say that's the solution to this. But this is not the extent of it. There's also been all of the Varlorb exploits. There's also been a whole bunch of things with lesser currency that I kind of don't want to give full reproduction details on, because I don't think the patch covered them. Like, people can probably figure out some of it. But there's a whole bunch of other item duplication stuff going on. I think that there's much bigger problems with loot at the moment in Path of Exile 2. And that what we need, there's no point starting a new economy until Magic Find is obliterated, because any new economy with Magic Find is just going to be, it's going to be a different type of garbage really quickly.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, so let's talk about that then. But before we do, oh my goodness, Gog, we just got right into the chat. I was supposed to say, howdy y'all, grab yourselves a drink. It's time for another Path of Exile 2 podcast. I'll have to edit that in into the beginning. Dang it.
Well,
crap. It's okay. So on the economy and Magic Find, I've listened to your opinions a few times on Magic Find. What is your current solution to the crisis that has enveloped everything? I see you, Crip, released a video on it the other day, I think yesterday. Everybody's talking about what to do with Magic Find and how it completely changes the game. I tend to agree with Crip that right now the game feels very good on SSF. But then I feel like feel like I just need to participate in trade to get a little bit more progress once I've stalled out and everything. But what do you think on the Magic Find debacle? What do you think your solution or their solution should be?
So I'll start by saying that I think that if Magic Find had released in a less broken state than it is now, it could probably be salvaged as a stat. But for the moment, I think any nerf Groninger Games does to Magic Find as a player stat. So whenever I talk about MF here, I'm only talking about increased item rarity that applies to the player.
Okay.
Any nerf they do there, people won't trust that it's enough to fix the problem. So I think it's kind of similar to after, for people who played PoE1, Calandra League. Calandra League was an example where Groninger Games made a number of changes to loot. And one of the central ones was that they moved a lot of loot from regular monsters, and particularly from League-specific monsters, into rare monsters. And they added a bunch of RNG procs to those rare monsters, and they were things that could be incredibly synergistic with player-based Magic Find stats, which in Path of Exile at the time was increased item quantity as well as increased item rarity. And so you'd have a situation where you'd encounter some rare monster. You would know in advance before you slayed it that this is going to have unusually high loot. And if you killed it without Magic Find, you might get 3 Divine Orbs, 3 Exalted Orbs, which in PoE1 are as rare as Divines, and 7 Chaos Orbs. If you killed it with full Magic Find, you might instead get 14 Divine Orbs, 14 Exalted Orbs. And so people would then be like, okay, I've got to pull in a player that's a Magic Find specialist to do this. And that gameplay loop was so bad that basically the player base said, yeah, fix this or we're not coming back. And then the next league, those ridiculous rare monsters, a bunch of the determinism was removed from them, and they got nerfed as well, and they also no longer had any impact of player rarity on them. That was actually a stealth change, but yeah, Groninger Games made a stealth change that removed that from them. So essentially, the Calandra system was not well received, but there might have been a version of it that was less extreme that might have been fun, but we couldn't find that out because GGG had to nuke it in order to alleviate the problems that it caused. I think we're at that stage with Magic Find at the moment. Like, if rarity isn't gone, my advice is going to be to people who are considering playing Path of Exile 2, don't start till it is.
Wow. And okay.
That's going to be to the point that, like, I'm not going to retract that if they partially fix it, and that's the real problem.
What's the...
Because I won't know the partial fix is enough.
Okay. So, and you're clearly talking about Magic Find on gear, not necessarily boost from the Atlas passive tree or from waystones and the like, just on gear, like rings and boots. And
that is correct. I'm 100% fine with it being available as an effect on monsters. Like there's a hidden, I think it's 2,700% rarity bonus on unique monsters. That's a good thing. And there's also a hidden rarity, and I think it's higher on ACK bosses and relevant map bosses. And there's also the rarity on the Atlas tree I'm less sold on, because it kind of competes with more interesting things. It's like
almost mandatory, right?
If they make it so weak that you don't feel it's mandatory, then I'm okay with it. But if it's not so weak that it's mandatory, it becomes like, I kind of want to add essences to my maps, but if I do that, I'm giving up rarity. Yeah, I'm not going to give up rarity. I'm gonna take the mandatory rarity. And so that's the thing I don't like about it being a choice there. On Waystones, though, it's perfect. On Waystones, it's like, yeah, this is the reward for doing harder content. So you just get more rarity.
That makes sense. Now, for people who might not understand why this is so affecting to so many different players and why you would say don't start Path of Exile 2 until this is fixed, why? Can you distill that down into a simple reason or few reasons for people who are listening or watching?
Yeah, okay. So if you're playing in the campaign is balanced around you having zero rarity, or at least close to zero. So everything just feels like it works. You get the loot that you need to continue progressing. You can get unlucky, but if you don't have an unusually unlucky streak, you get the loot you need to keep progressing at an about expected rate as you're progressing through the campaign. However, once you get to endgame, you reach a point where you've got the gear that covers the basics, and only the better drops, only the better items that drop are going to be upgrades. You are not going to find an upgrade until you've got increasing amounts of rarity, because the threshold for what is loot becomes higher when you're at endgame. So to take, for example, during the campaign, if you find a... what's the name of the rare amulet... the name of the amulet base that has life regen as the implicit. It's quite bad.
It's the red one, right? Not Bloodstone, that's life. Is it Crimson? Crimson amulet?
Let's just assume it is Crimson. Yeah, I think it might be. Yeah, yeah,
gonna
Crimson.
Gonna hope.
So if you find a rare Crimson amulet during the campaign, it's probably going to be an upgrade unless the stats on it are just flagrantly wrong for your build. You know, like, you just get good stuff on it and it's like, okay, cool, I'm going to stick this on. But at endgame, the threshold needed to beat what you've already got is higher. Yeah. And so it means that you sort of, at the moment, you need more and more rarity in order to get more and more of these reasonably lucky drops for you. And that then means that you're more likely to get things you can use. Well, with the way that item rarity is set up at the moment, every item that doesn't have rarity on it, that can have rarity, effectively feels like it's a loot penalty when you're using it. I don't know if you're familiar with the PoE 1 item Void Home. It's a two-handed mace that literally no one uses. Like, this is the first thing you filter out. But it has quite good damage stats for its level. But it also has penalties of reduced XP gain and reduced item quantity, or maybe it's rarity. But it nerfs your drops and it nerfs your XP gain.
Yeah.
And so even though it's a good weapon when you could first equip it, no one ever considers equipping it because the drawback is too big on it. Essentially, every item in Path of Exile 2 feels like Void Home because loot is pre-nerfed to allow for the fact that Magic Find can exist. And if you're not equipping Magic Find, you're therefore suffering that loot penalty.
I feel that. I feel that very hard, especially in Trade League. And
yeah, and I think in SSF as well. Like, basically, items that... it's just in SSF, it's harder to get Magic Find, which means that it takes a bit longer. But yeah, it's noticeable that actually Hardcore is where it's having less effect. Because in Hardcore, people are less confident to wear Magic Find gear. And as a result, you see there's more build diversity in Hardcore than there is in Softcore at the moment. In Softcore, everyone's pivoting over to things that can use the Mahoxidal Shield socketed with Soul Cores that grant rarity. In Hardcore, including Hardcore Trade, people don't feel confident to use the Mahoxidal Shield. And as a result, you're seeing more build variety there.
Right.
Melee, of all things, is more common in Hardcore than it is in SC.
That's crazy. See, my wild solution, Gog, is they maybe they don't need to fully remove rarity. I would be shocked if they fully removed it. If they left it on items like Ventor's Gamble, gold amulets as implicits, are you fine with that? You know, certain uniques, or are you saying just nuke rarity from orbit? Gone.
I would have been fine with leaving it on limited spots before this before the debacle that it's become in the last couple of weeks. But now I think, like, do you trust this stat? You've seen how bad it is when there's a lot of it. It might jump the shark again later. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm just of the opinion, just nuke it from orbit, replace it on item. Like, ultimately, I'd rather it was replaced without legacy versions as well, so that people that don't want to repeat the campaign can play in a healthy economy.
Yeah.
But because I think it's going to really break things if that, like, they're going to need to remove the pre-nerfing of loot that Magic Find masks in order to make the game feel good without Magic Find. And if you do that while have Magic Find still as a legacy thing in Standard, Standard's going to be an absolute cesspool.
Most definitely, especially if they keep the three-pronged approach of it increasing your chance to get unique items, which increases your chance to get better unique items because you're getting more unique items. Is that math, Sir Gog? Am I right on that, essentially?
I believe. This is not tested, right? This is, right. I believe, though, based on some of Jonathan's comments, that it may actually just modify what uniques you get. So you're more likely to get, you're more likely to get Wings of Erisfane, Erisfane's Wings, Calm's Heart, Dream Fragments, Astramentis, the super rare stuff. I'm deliberately mentioning things that are popular as well as right. things that aren't in there. You're more likely to see something like a Life Sprig replaced by something from that list.
Right.
That's my understanding, but I could be wrong. And just like you don't get more currency with rarity, right. but your transmutes are more likely to be replaced by an Exalt if you're less lucky or a Divine if you're very lucky.
Right, and it's taking that three-pronged approach. So it's uniques, it's better rares, and it's better currency that's dropping all at once. And I never participated in any Magic Find Strat in PoE1, but rarity in PoE1 only affected unique drop chance, right? Or am I totally off base on that?
Okay, so Calandra League, it affected currency. Yep. It affected certain rare monster conversions. It actually still affects some rare monster conversions, but they're just not very important ones.
Right.
So if we go in PoE1 at the moment, currency. You know when sometimes you kill a monster and it explodes into a whole bunch of different currency?
Mm-hmm.
If you get primarily socket modifying stuff, so Jeweler's Orbs and Fusing Orbs, that was one particular type of explosion. Likewise, if you get alchemies, things that you can get from vendors, so alchemies, transmutes, and the like, that explosion changes with, that specific one changes with rarity, but not by very much. The one that provides modifying currency, so divine orbs if you're lucky, chaos orbs if you're a bit less lucky, that one, that currency conversion no longer considers player rarity. And that's something that players, like that was a stealth change in Sanctum League, but it's really well documented through data mining that that's the case. Right.
And do you think players are more fine with that? Because it's just not as egregious as it is in Path of Exile 2 and affecting so many different things so massively. Because I haven't seen a lot of hubbub about rarity. You know, there was the whole quantity debacle in Necropolis, but I haven't seen any real complaints about rarity since Calandra League. And I do try to stay in the know on a lot of stuff.
Oh, rarity got pretty busted in Necropolis. Like, it jumped the shark in Necropolis, it jumped the shark in Affliction. One of the Affliction Wisps affects rarity. I can never remember which of them is which. I know blue is the one that causes currency conversions, but one of the Affliction Wisps was causing rarity, and you could get to the point that every item that dropped in a map, almost every item that dropped in a map was unique in those leagues. The thing was that it just meant that unique items not named Mageblood pretty much stopped being loot.
Yeah.
You know, you remember one of the best indicators is what's the price of Headhunter and what's the price of Unnatural Instinct in Path of Exile 1.
Right.
The trade league value of those will tell you whether Magic Find has jumped the shark in that league or not, because Unnatural Instinct is an extremely good and universally good jewel, and Headhunter is something that there is a large but not overwhelming demand for.
Right. Right. And we're kind of seeing what do you think the Headhunter replacement is in PoE2? Is it literally just what's the Ingenuity? That belt?
Well, Ingenuity, as long as Magic Find exists, there's no other belt that can compete with Ingenuity.
Yeah. And that's just because of the boost it gives to the rarity increase on your rings that you're wearing?
It's the only way you can get a large amount of rarity on your belt. And on top of that, Ingenuity is good for its combat stats as well. But on top of that, it's kind of like the Mahoxidal Shield. It's like there's a Magic Find option, and then there's other options that are Void Homes. And every other belt, including Headhunter, is a Void Home.
Okay. All right.
And including three Charm Socket belts, they are Void Homes as well. Yes, they give you more character power than you would get possibly off Ingenuity, but at an unacceptably high loot penalty. Different if you're bossing. If you're bossing, you can use a Void Home. But if you're playing a map clear build, Ingenuity is the only option.
Definitely. So Magic Find, it's quite the debacle. I know some people don't see it as a debacle, but obviously it has run rampant throughout the community. It'll be very interesting to see what Grinding Gear Games ends up doing, if they do anything at all. I know you said you will not recommend PoE2 to new players until they fix it, but How have you been enjoying your Path of Exile 2 experience so far, Sir Gog? Good, bad?
I think it's a 9 out of 10 experience, level 1 to 70. 70 to 80 is 7.5 out of 10 experience. You can feel like there's a bit of strain going on there. And true endgame has a lot more problems, which is to be expected. Like, it's early access. They're working things out.
What are you really enjoying about the campaign experience in the early endgame?
Bosses that are able to just... Bosses that don't hold back. Like, PoE1, the bosses... There's a couple that will get you on your first time through, but they're all pretty easy, and you can just throw corpses at them to get through them as well. So, you know, like, if you never learn the mechanics of innocence in Path of Exile 1, is probably the hardest boss in the campaign. If you don't learn the mechanics, you can just keep going it back in there, and the only thing that innocence regains is just his energy shield back each time. And that's only in line with, like, the hit points of a tankier than usual white monster.
Yeah. Now, which boss has been your favorite in the campaign so far? I know that you've put out some guides on bosses. So are those enjoyable to make as well?
Yeah, actually, there's a lot of work that goes into those. Jemunra was my favorite, definitely Act 2, the Act 2 boss. But that was the one that took the most work. Like, that took forever to put together that guide. But that was definitely my favorite boss.
Do you like the moves, the atmosphere, anything in particular?
The fact that it always felt fair, but I lost a lot of times trying that boss. I was playing a weak ascendancy. Like, I was a blood mage, so I essentially didn't have any benefit from my ascendancy at this point. But I was playing at a lower power level than you would expect going into it. But it was just... There's something about the fight where you never got one shot in the fight. You could always look back at your fight and go, okay, I died because I misplayed, three and a half seconds. If you're only going to know the times if you look back at a video of it and you frame count it. But if you go, you can say, all right, 3.5 seconds before the death, I failed to dodge this particular slam. That ultimately was the thing that would get me killed. Or sometimes you'd be like, oh, 45 seconds before I died, I took a slam and I had to waste a life flask charge. And then I got to the final phase with not enough life flasks as a result, and I couldn't beat that hardest final phase.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where in Path of Exile 1, like, when is there a mistake that you can make on a boss that's going to kill you 45 seconds later? Very maybe special. Dropping Maven goo in the wrong place in Uber Maven.
Mm-hmm. Just the goos and Shaper and Maven, but I totally know what you mean with Jemunra. I had that happen. My first go at him during the campaign, I would have something in the first phase where I would waste a life flask, and then he'd get me with a few slams in the second phase or something, and I'd screw myself over, and then the same thing would happen in the second phase, and it's always, you could have avoided that. You could have avoided that. It never felt like total BS. I think that's something that all of the act bosses have done very well, and even the bosses in Endgame, I do feel pretty good about fighting them in all of maps. You can't give them ridiculous modifiers like Path of Exile 1 bosses seem to get, where their attack speed and movement speed are super juiced up so you can't tell what's coming at you. Even in those boss fights, it seems okay. It's only in hack fights where I get so pissed off that I either literally log out or I contemplate logging out. Is that one of the experiences that you're feeling in the 70 to 80 and 80 to 100 range right now? Like, just frustration when kind of fighting packs and randomly dying like that?
I've got a frustration that has caused me to rage log twice. And this is one of the most annoying frustrations because it's one of those ones where you haven't made a combat mistake. You're not like, oh, okay, looking back, these are the specific lessons I learned from it. This is a stupid chore that you have to do in PoE2. And it's the times that I've gone out of a map to sell, I've gone back in without clicking the well, and then I've died because I've thought I've had life flask charges and I haven't. Oh, that is the time. That is the number one thing that's made me rage log and not log on for the rest of the night. It's my own mistake, but it's also just so infuriating.
Yeah, I totally get that. See, mine is just the dumb on-death effects and then what just happened to me in the Citadel, or I just walked into a room and I got barraged down by a bunch of monsters. I just died in like literally less than a second, and I'm just like, yeah, so technically that was my mistake, but man, it feels bad losing everything in the map. Are you on board for that semi-hardcore experience wherein you lose, even just a regular map, you lose all the cool stuff about the map, the boss, Delirium, Expedition, whatever, and then in a Citadel, you just lose the entire map. Are you on board with that, or do you think they should walk it back a little bit, or do your whole nuke it from orbit thing with Magic Find? Get rid of it.
Sick, sorry, I'm just... Oh, hang on.
Oh, no, you're totally good, dude. I can stall all day.
I was just getting my notes for this, because I'm writing a video that's going to be talking about this. I'm just going to jump to page 3 of it one sec.
Oh, go for it. We have Script Gog coming on right now. You guys are getting a little video preview. Make sure you go and subscribe to the Sir Gog YouTube channel. Follow him on Twitch as well. He streams sometimes. Is that good? We good?
Yeah, so... Let's start the other way, and let's start that one portal was the norm, and then POE 1 came along. Let's say POE 1 was the later release and had the 6-portal thing.
Okay.
I think it's worth thinking of it this way, because you want to try and then look at exactly what's going on. I think the 6-portals cause a lot of problems in POE 1, because what happens is that once you meet a certain character power threshold, there is zero skill component as to whether you kill a boss or not.
That makes sense.
Imagine that you're some explosive trapper and you know that you can burst the boss down, you know, in 15 seconds. And you know that you can usually do that without making any mistakes, but sometimes you go splat. So with a POE 1 rule set, that boss, you are 100% win chance. With a POE 2 rule set, you're like 75% win chance. Now, what this means is that in POE 1, bosses become a slot machine because a large percentage of the player base are beating them every time they attempt them. Or so you buy the entry ticket to the boss and then your success is guaranteed. And so the market value of the entry ticket is sort of balanced around the fact that players are never failing it. In Path of Exile 2, what I think they're trying to do is make it a situation where that's not the case, where instead... you buy the entry ticket and then it comes down to whether you've got the skill or not to succeed. And then if you do succeed, then there'll be a margin between the expected value of the loot that you get and what you put into it. Kind of like the hardest of the Sanctum runs, which is the Temporalis or Original Sin run. It's like there's always a margin on that, on the amount that you can sell the item for compared to what it costs to attempt it. So... I think that that's the design change they're going for. They're trying to make bossing work better, but they've made another mistake here, and that is that they've made it so that it's rare to get the attempts at these bosses. And that, I think, is the real problem. If bosses were more common, then failing one and learning one wouldn't feel so bad.
True.
Instead of like losing 100 breach splinters when you fail a breach stone, you lost. If instead of losing 300, you lost 100, and then of course comparably the drop rates on the items would have to drop to a third or so of what they are now, then the spikiness of this learning process wouldn't be so bad. But now we've got this situation where it's high stakes, but it's also ultra high risk, which is something that, you know, like you say, people who want the ultra high risk tend to play hardcore instead. You know, there's an optional rule set for that.
Yeah. I suppose I like
the... At the same time, though, it's noticeable from the fact that hardcore is not seeing massive amounts of characters dying. There are tools available to players to beat tankier. The thing is, what are you doing at the moment? If you're playing in softcore, do you invest in magic find stats or do you invest in additional defense? Well, one of these choices is wrong, and that is investing in defense. And then this ends up making things feel worse because you're dying to one-shots, but you're dying to one-shots because that's the way that there's more loot. Because you've got magic find in your gear, and so, yeah, okay, you lose the odd map here and there to a mistake. But I feel like you can't fix the... You can't really test how the one-portal mechanics play until you've nuked MF.
It all comes back to Magic Find. I knew you were going to tie it in a nice bow, Sirgal. Come on. Very, very good. I think you also, I think you're also very correct that the rarity of the bosses, unrelated to increased item rarity, the rarity of the bosses really is what hits home to me, because when I try a boss, you know, I've only fought one Citadel boss, but I just failed the Citadel without fighting the boss. I died to trash mobs. So I feel like there's a variance that's too high there, because I don't know when I'm ever going to find that next Citadel or be able to fight that next cool boss. That sucks. And Path of Exile 1, they had it down pat. They had a good system in place that was deterministic for the core bosses. You knew when you were going to fight that next boss, even if it was, like you said, a slot machine. You're pretty bang on right there. Even in Path of Exile 1, a lot of the time, you were better off just selling your fragments, which sucked. I still killed the boss because I liked fighting the boss. It wasn't a slot machine for me. I was very weak on all my characters. I just liked that experience. In Path of Exile 2, that pathway isn't even there, and I just want it to be there. Ugh.
Frustrating. Yeah, I think it would be a lot more interesting if things were less rare. And the other thing I think they've gone with is that in PoE 1, it's often like one boss per 28 maps. It seems to be their core philosophy. It's not always exactly that. But if you think like with Eater of Worlds and Searing Exarch, it is exactly one per 28. But if you think in terms of like, let's take Uber Cirrus, for example. For Uber Cirrus, you're running your tier 16 maps. Occasionally you get a 17 to drop. I think you get like a 17 every 40% of the time when you're running a 16 or so, maybe a bit less than that. Depends on your exact Scarab setup. But then you go and you run your 17s. Your 17s are more of an effort. You might fail them every now and again. But then when you do beat one, you get something like a quarter of the access to key to your next Uber Pinnacle boss, and you can target specific ones somewhat. You know, if you want to, if you wanted Uber Cirrus specifically, you can target him somewhat by choosing which 17 to go for. And so there's this thing where you know you're making progress towards them, but also you... it doesn't take all that many maps. I think in PoE 2, they might have the same number of maps. They might have gone, oh, okay, 28 maps, that works really well in PoE 1. Let's model out exactly how we're doing everything based on 1 per 28 maps. The thing is, 28 maps in PoE 2 is a lot slower than it is in 1. Yeah. And I don't think that's just a matter of character power. I think the maps are larger, and the completion goal of being slay every single rare monster is something that... I'm not sold on that as a completion goal. I think it should be slay all but one. And it should also, like Last Epoch has, have some different things that can come up as well.
Definitely. Do you think regular map bosses should be a little bit more common? Or do you think the cadence of every 1 in 3 or 4 is a good one?
I need to think on that. I feel like, again, it might just be that we're not progressing fast enough through maps. PoE 2 maps are just so much slower. I think that might be the real problem. And you don't want a situation where you firstly address things by increasing the frequency of map bosses, say, to 50%. Then after that, you increase the speed, and then you realize map bosses no longer feel special, and then you kind of got to try and sell a nerf back to the old rates. And yeah, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's a good spot to be in.
I think they've got to increase the difficulty of the early map bosses. Maybe I'm an outlier, but on my monk, I got to maps and I'd kill all those bosses in 5 seconds, 5 to 7 seconds. And that lasted all the way until I started getting the Atlas tree for bosses, and I could increase the boss difficulty slightly. Now bosses actually last like 20, 25 seconds on my character, and I get to engage in some of the mechanics. During that entire first era of progression, it didn't feel like they were special. Like, they were special in the fact that they dropped a lot of loot, but it didn't feel any different from a rare monster, besides there being a little cinematic beforehand showcasing, oh yeah, here's a big boss fight, here's a big boss fight, and then they just kind of petered out on the ground. I think
they also have abilities that can kill you, more so than rares. Like, rares... Right. There are rares that can one-shot you, but it's pretty rare. Like, a lot of the bosses do have a Telegraph Slam.
Yes, and maybe it was just a facet of my character being one of, you know, the most overtuned classes on release. I'm playing a monk, so I just drop Bell. I have charged staff all ready to go, and the monsters just melt very quickly, especially in lower tier maps. It was just so jarring going from acts 1 through 3, which is where I split my enjoyment of PoE, to Cruel, to maps. Everything shifted very quickly therein, and maybe my build popped off. I didn't feel like I did, and I know I've repeated this many times over, but those first three acts, I did like that bosses hit back a little bit, as you said earlier, and they didn't hold back. I like that feeling, and I'm starting to get it again now that I'm into the deeper end game. I feel like it's just missing that little stretch there, but maybe they were going for that sort of thing. I know, like, Zizzerin's Gauntlet, I think he pitched it as a brutal campaign, easier early end game, and then a really difficult end game. Maybe that's what GGG used as their inspiration for PoE2's end game.
Yeah, you know what I'm thinking might be a case here?
Yeah.
I am not sure. Like, Act 1 ends at level 15, Act 2 at 32, and 3 at 45. I'm not sure that these numbers couldn't be changed to, like, 14, 30, 42 to give Cruel less of that victory lap feel that I think it has now. I don't know whether the victory lap feel is positive or negative. I think I'm probably a little apprehensive about it, but I'll want to be able to have leveled 4 or 5 characters before I can really be certain on that.
It might just be, well, we know it is temporary too. It was probably slapped on there. Not slapped. I'm going to say it. It was slapped on there so that they could work on the end game and do some solid work on that. So they just said, okay, we're going to do Cruel. We're going to put everybody on endgame, and then we're going to add these final three acts after we have a good foundation for said endgame. So the whole progression feel there is going to probably feel quite a bit different by the end of early access, I'd say. Like, a lot of the stuff we're talking about now is going to be so shifted in 6 to 12 months. The game will likely be unrecognizable. And, Sirgog, how long have you been playing Path of Exile 1? I know quite a while.
I played it a very small amount in 13, and then I started playing more around 2014, but was Pyrandus League 2016?
Oh, or man. 15? I don't know.
That was the first league that I got really quite a way into endgame in.
Okay.
So I started downing Atsuri, getting to tier 12 map bosses, that sort of thing. That was Pyrandus League, so I feel like that was like maybe 2.2. Before that, I had been playing the game, but had been pretty casually. Back then, my primary game was Dungeons & Dragons Online, which is...
Oh my gosh, Sirgog, we gotta give a warning to people. Dude, that was my primary game too. I know we've talked about this very briefly, but that is the game I played from 2008 to 2012 when Guild Wars 2 came out.
So 2008 was... that was like the Shroud was new, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. Yep. The Twilight Veil, the Shroud. Oh, green steel weapons. Oh my gosh. I love that game. My wife loved it. She's sitting over there. We played that game together all the way through. Oh, dude. I was in a top tier raiding guild and everything. Oh, what a game.
I loved the first completion of highest difficulty Fall of Truth when that came out.
Oh, really?
I mean, granted, that was on the test server. But, we developed the first strategy that won on that.
That's awesome. I remember downing Vault of Night for the first time and killing Vella. I don't know why. It was just such an epic feel walking through the portal and coming into the, like, I think it's called the Plane of Night, and seeing, like, all the different planets and moons everywhere. It was such a cool environment, dude. They killed it on that game. I'm so disappointed that it, like, there's not a new version out. I know they're still developing it. My brother plays on... He's a VIP, and I guess they do seasons now, like hardcore seasons, and that's where everybody plays. Yeah. Have you tried those?
Nah, it's like, I found that, like, it was DDO that I learned this lesson from, that once you start seeing pay-to-cheat mechanics in a game, it's time to get out. And DDO was very slow about introducing them. Like, it's one where early on, I mean, they always sold mana pots in the store, what would you say is a Path of Exile equivalent? It's like maybe a mass cooldown refresh that was like 20 cents to buy for an instant mass cooldown refresh or something like that.
Right.
Like there was just all these things that would just give you a sizable boost.
The manuals, I remember.
In there. But then they jumped the shark. I think the time at which I was like, okay, I'm not spending more money on this game, was the first time they sold plus three tomes in the store. And then I
Yes.
was like, oh, okay. They promised not to sell raid loot in the store. Now they're selling the second top tier of raid loot at the time in the store. And it was like, and it wasn't just the, like when I say second top tier, it wasn't just the second, you know, the stuff that was like recently obsoleted. This was the stuff you were chasing out of that second rarest tier. Like it was the stuff that was, yeah, like it, that left a foul taste in my mouth.
I remember getting a plus four charisma tome on my favorite soul. Oh my gosh. Oh, what a day. What a day. Yeah, if that ever happens in Path of Exile, that's true pay to win, you guys. Not pay for convenience. It's not any. They have you looked recently? They are selling all sorts of stuff in the store. But people are eating it up. Like they have a the what would Chris Wilson say? 10,000 players. That's all you need to run a game. I think they have that, and that is what they're doing. They're just like milking the game out, releasing steady, okay content updates, keeping the game running.
Yeah, and the other things that I think were really clear with that game, because like it's quite a useful like sort of example of the way that people often talk about the slippery slope fallacy, but Dungeons and Dragons Online was the slippery slope example, and that you know it's not usually a fallacy. It was just the way that it was done so slowly and subtly.
Yeah, I hope it never happens to another one of my favorite games. I've been safe so far. That was the last one. I actually stopped playing that game because I had a game-breaking bug where all my epic destinies were deleted and support
Oh.
turbine wouldn't refund, and I maxed out the character, dude. All epic, because back then, or I think when it was first introduced, you could level up all the epic destinies to max on one character. It felt really good, and that was like a multiple TR character too. All deleted, and I was like, support, can you guys, you know? Give me back my epic destinies. And they're like, no, I'm afraid we can't roll back in that manner because of X, Y, and Z. And Guild Wars 2 released like a week later. So I was like, whatever, I'm gonna go play Guild Wars 2. And then I never really came back to DDO again because my character was
Yeah,
bricked.
and to put that into PoE1 equivalent, in PoE1 equivalent terms, that'd be like you have hit level 100 on a character, and then a bug resets you to 83.
Oh, it was rough. And you don't have that much time, you know, and you're not the god tier grinder, so it took you a really long time to get there. Oh, it was a
Yeah,
bad
destinies
feeling.
were slow back then. They
They
were,
were.
that was. And you also had to play in off destinies. Oh God. Anyways, it's like totally talking about another
Was a
game, but
long tangent, but it was worthwhile. What were we talking about? Playing Path of
it
Exile. Oh,
was
yes.
such a good game
It
until the
was.
pay to play took over though.
It
Like the
seriously was a good
whole
game.
the atmosphere of dungeons there was like I think just unmatched in any sort of MMO. And the way that you got that speed up, like you started out, you'd struggle through content, then you'd get to the point that you were blasting through it at full speed, and you'd start this like, you know, Vault of Night 3, you'd go from your first run of it would take you 55. Your first run would take 55 minutes, and then you'd get to the point that you're doing it on epic difficulty in 11.
Dude, are you talking Vault of Night 3? You're talking about the one with the Marut, right? Oh my god, I found that thing so many times. Holy crap. That's bringing me back. Oh, when I first did that. Okay, so here, one more DDO story, you guys. I'm so sorry. I can see the viewers actually going up as we talk about DDO. So we should
That's
just
fine.
keep talking about DDO. I remember my friends and I, it was actually just my brother and I, sorry. When we first started playing DDO, it Korthos Island was the starter zone. And we thought that was the entire game for about 4 months. So we're like restarting characters in Korthos, running through, because we were much younger when we started playing. And just over and over, maxing out the exploration zones, trying to beat everything. And then we finally find out the harbor is a thing. Just like one day, randomly, we talk to this NPC and we thought, oh my gosh, the harbor, this awesome news. And then we go into the marketplace and then we realize, oh my goodness, House Jurasko. And we find this one quest called Red Willow's Ruins, which has a bunch of giants in the final part of it. Oh my gosh. And you can jump on these pillars and you can line up all the giants around. Oh my. We loved that. And that is when we realized, oh my God, there's a store and there's adventure packs in the store and there's all this stuff you can get, all this content. Dude, we were young and we were hooked, and we spent so much money buying all those adventure packs. Oh my gosh. What a time. What a time.
Yeah, it was a fantastic game until and I think the final straw, the time at which I went, I am not spending another cent on this game, was when they had the Otto's cheat box, which was basically just a power leveling cheat code that they'd sell in the store.
I know exactly what you're talking about. That game changed very quickly within the span of a year. And I was going to ask you, when you were playing Path of Exile 1, and you still are, of course, but back then when it was, you know, 2015, 2016, the game year to year wasn't unrecognizable, but it underwent significant change, you'd say, right? Year to year?
Yep.
So we can probably imagine seeing that in Path of Exile 2. And I feel like that's something that maybe a lot of people are also missing out on, is the fact that the Path of Exile 2 of today is probably going to look nothing like PoE 2 in 1 year from now.
Yeah, there were a lot of real turning points early on. You had 1.1, which was Sacrifice of the Vaal, introduced, like, that was a substantial change to endgame philosophy in that you had, like, okay, so they added Adzeri, but one of the central things that they did there was by adding Vaal Orbs, they increased map sustain a lot. And so it went from a thing where you spent most of your time at endgame in white tier maps to you can actually sustain yellow and red. They didn't have the tiers then, but that was something that was noticeable. 1.2 introduced the Masters, and the Master missions gave you a daily access to like one tier 6 or 7 map each. And so that would basically mean that you'd have a whole bunch of extra stuff to run. The next big turning point was 2.4, which was, that was Essence League, but it was mostly because the Atlas of Worlds was introduced.
Right, yep.
And then the big turning points after that, there was a huge amount of player power creep in 3.1 when they added Shaper and Elder Influence, so gear got way stronger. And then from 3.4, which was Delve onwards, every league had quite a bit of power, mostly in crafting, but not always. So fossils were, you know, people meme on how bad fossils are in PoE1, but they're only bad because they've been obsoleted. When they were added, they were an incredible power boost.
Mm-hmm.
They have been nerfed a little bit since, but the core functionality still remains. And so there are a whole bunch of things like that. Then, of course, you had the Atlas overhaul with 3.9, another one with 3.13, and then the explosion in density and events to do in maps that came first with 3.17 and the final incarnation of the tree, but then 3.20 and the massive numbers changes that they made to the tree then.
Yeah.
So I think the game is now very... And then also there was the Scarab overhaul in 24. So yeah, mm-hmm. There's been a number of big turning points in PoE1, and we're currently at the point where we still haven't yet got... the 1.2 Masters.
Right, that's true. You think something like that is going to come into Path of Exile 2?
Yeah, I reckon they're definitely going to add in various additional types of content.
Yeah. So what is there any one particular thing that you think would just click into Path of Exile 2 very easily and help players throughout the game? I'm talking about, you know, maybe an intro quest to crafting, maybe just another crafting system. We've had a lot of debate about adding the crafting bench back into the game and whether that might be better than runes. I'm very anti-rune. I'm not sure what your stance is on the topic, but would I'd love to hear it.
Runes are different to the crafting bench. I think because they push items beyond their normal limits, like in PoE1, the crafting bench takes some of the power budget of the item and gives you agency over it, whereas in PoE2, it adds to the power budget of the item.
Hmm.
And there's, like, I think that runes except in two items. There are two exceptions to this, Mahoxdor's Machination and Moroya Invictus. They just need text to prevent this change affecting to them. But runes should be able to be overwritten.
Yeah.
So... If I've got a lightning resist in my boots from a rune, I should be able to overwrite that with fire resist. But Mahoxdor's Machination and Moroya Invictus, I'm fine with those having an explicit exception saying you cannot resocket runes in these.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. But Grinding Gear Games said, oh yeah, runes should basically take the place of the crafting bench. Do you think allowing players to overwrite runes does take the place of the crafting bench? Or
is it brings that level it closer to it? The way that I was thinking about this, because actually in that write-up of that video that I was doing,
I'm sorry for spoiling that video. I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine. I'll spoil it here. That the thing that I was thinking, Path of Exile 1 does not have any bound, like doesn't have any equivalent of bind a character from a game like World of Warcraft. Okay. What bind a character does is you sabotage the resale value of an item in order to get a character power boost for yourself. Now, although it's not as strict, socketing a lightning resistance rune into your boots feels like that. It feels like equipping a bound item.
It does.
But only at a certain percentage, because you're sabotaging the item's resale value in order to get a short-term boost of power. Now, I don't like that, and that's why I think they should be able to be overwritten. But then there's also the fact that it's pushing things beyond their normal limits rather than just providing agency over them. I would like to see some sort of changes there, but I kind of want to test it with the rune system as it is, but with the ability to overwrite. I think things will feel a lot better. The other thing I want to see is some sort of RNG, but directed crafting, which we don't really have at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that would be something along the lines of
Arvis.
A Chaos Orb that reads the following. Removes a mod at random from an item, adds a mod at random from an item, fire modifiers are more likely to be chosen for both removal and addition.
So bring Harvest back. In a way.
Oh no, this is not Harvest. This is something, it's more likely to be chosen, which is basically the text that's used on fossils in PoE1 to mean 6 to 10 times as likely.
Okay.
So the idea being here that if an item, you're likely to just simply remove and you'll often remove and re-add the same mod with this. You kind of have to test this because there's a potential for it to be too strong. But the fact that it's removing what it's adding is then putting a bit of a limit in how deterministic it can be. And it also has the possibility of removing one of the other mods that you do want to keep on the item. Because one of the things that GGG have done with PoE 2, in PoE 1, there's only a certain number of item slots. Some of them are going to be made up from loot you find on the ground. Some of them are going to be made up from items that you craft from scratch. And essentially, every buff to crafting is a nerf to every item on the ground because they're competing with them. Every buff to items on the ground is a nerf to crafting. GGG and PoE 1 have had an approach of let items on the ground be trash. Let them simply be nothing relevant at all once you're in red maps. And because of that, they've been able to give crafting a lot of power. In PoE 2, they've decided to go the other way. They want items on the ground to remain looted all the time. And so they then have to nerf crafting to make that a reality.
Right.
Well, I feel like you can possibly find other ways of doing this. Anyways, that'll be something I'll go into more in that video once I've sort of written up notes for, but I haven't got around to recording it.
Yeah, I think there's a good middle ground that they should be able to find there. Because you can still want players to pick items up, but then be able to do something with them besides RNG Fest once you have them in your inventory. Which is that's what I feel like I'm doing, because I can't really engage with something like Essences or Omens myself unless I am blasting madly for certain rituals, or I'm just making a lot of divines. Like, I think I found 2 Greater Essences, 0 Omens, and probably 40 Chaos Orbs or something. I can't really engage in a lot of the crafting systems that way if I really wanted to. So just more accessibility for crafting in addition to good items dropping. I think that's... It sounds easy. Obviously, it's going to take more work on their end. But I think finding that sweet middle ground is the best way to go about it.
Yeah, here's another thought, right? What would you think of this? Have you played Last Epoch? You have, right?
I have, yep.
At least to low corruption greater rifts?
Yep. Monoliths, yep.
Yep, okay. So what this means is you have this sense that with Last Epoch, you have extremely deterministic crafting up to a certain power level, like up to 20 total tiers on your gear, like 5, 5, 5, 5. Yeah. When I say extremely deterministic, it's like each individual attempt that you make might only be 1 in 8 to get there, but you can easily make 8 attempts before the time that you before the time you get to your first greater rift. And so with that in mind, I'm kind of curious whether there'd be a space for something similar in PoE 2, where you can get, say, gear that's like, I don't know, try 25%. No, that's probably too high. Try 20% resist on a helmet with two other mods on it, two other mods that you've got some degree of agency over.
Yeah.
I'm curious how, like, so it's a rare item that obsoletes everything except well-rolled rares, but well-rolled rares crush it. I guess Goldrum sort of is an example of that already. And Goldrum's, like, something people are genuinely equipping for quite a while in PoE 2. So, yeah, I'm kind of curious how something along those lines would... If you had some way of crafting something that's Goldrum level or even a little bit lower tier than Goldrum, how would feel?
Yeah, I'd also love to see... I don't think Path of Exile 2 does this. Maybe it does exist and I haven't seen it. Last Epoch has tiers that you can only get from items rolled on the ground, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yep. So is it Exalted in Last Epoch, right?
Yeah, and those tiers, I think it's not clear to people, like, if people aren't familiar with Last Epoch, these are massively higher as well. Yes. So if you had to say, if the tiers were 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10 for the versions you could craft, Exalted Tier 6 would be 15, and Exalted Tier 7 would be 20.
It's a lovely feeling. I feel like they should put that into PoE 2. It's such a win because it's such a feel-good moment, and it is that lottery moment that they always want to spew throughout the game. So I know that they were trying to do that with the Tier 5 items. I think those are pretty common at this point, and they still don't have the, oh my god, I totally got a GG item. I've picked up Tier 5 items, and it's like, what? That's your Tier 5 item, GGG? Come on. It doesn't even have good rolls on it. Maybe it doesn't have Light Radius, but it doesn't have, like, the best mods. Seeing something with, you know, that example is great. You know, max tier, let's say it's tier 10, that you can craft on it normally, and then you get a T16 item, like, oh, it's just such a mind blow. I love that.
Yeah, I'd be open to trying that. I feel like it's something that's hard to walk back if it plays badly.
League mechanic, maybe?
Yeah, maybe put it in one slot. I reckon, and actually put it in the belt slot, because the belt slot has Ingenuity there as well at the moment. No, Ingenuity is the only viable belt while Magic Find exists. we have this problem again. Let's say that you fix that. Say that you fix the Magic Find problem. Then at that point, I think it'd be quite interesting to see what exalted items would feel like if they were done like that.
Oh my gosh. Magic Find, man. Oh.
You'd have to make it though, so that Omen of Whittling cannot apply to them.
What's the Whittling one?
Chaos Orbs. It's the one that's super deterministic, Chaos Orb one. The removed mod on a Chaos Orb is always the lowest tier mod.
Yeah,
they're at a price where, like, you can only use them, like, this. They're more expensive to use than Fracturing Orbs are in PoE 1, but closer to Fracturing Orbs than Henalox in PoE 1.
Interesting.
In terms of their price, like, they're cheaper than a Fracturing Orb in terms of the amount of Divine Orbs they trade for, but they're also something you spam on an item.
Right, right.
The Fracturing Orb is 25% to get your result that you want, whereas Whittling you can use a lot more. But they're not as expensive. They're not as exclusive as Hingalock crafting is in PoE1, but they're more exclusive than Fracture crafting. So they're pretty rare, but they would have to have some sort of nerf applied to them to make them not work with exalted items. You'd also have to have... that's the other thing. You probably also would have to have the Sinistral Annulment and Dextral Annulment omens also be watched as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have to have some restrictions on it. Otherwise, people are going to make some busted items. Absolutely. Now, you have a lot of knowledge on all these different high-tier crafting methods. Are you participating on this or just doing a heck of a lot of research? Like on Reddit?
I'm just researching. YouTube? I haven't got capital in-game to do any sort of high-end crafting.
How is your blood mage going? I know you said that's what you started. I presume you're still on because you said you were about to start your second character.
Yeah.
Is it going okay?
So my approach has been I am playing suboptimally because I'm trying to stick with something to fix a few problems with it, just to see if I can get it into a solid spot. I have seen other people have solved the blood mage. There are a couple of quite solid builds going around for it. There's the dead build that I saw Alan put together on Mobalytics recently that felt like it was really good. And there was someone else had something that jumped out at me. Oh yeah, it was a Sanctum Specialist.
Oh, okay.
X-class Sanctum Specialist build. It was capable of mapping, but it was absolutely sublime at Sanctum.
Oh, really? I saw a cool mace build. Two-handed mace, ignite, bleed, blood mage build. It was very interesting.
That sounds cool.
That does sound cool. I don't know if they're in the chat. Scorewin was using it about a week and a half, 2 weeks into early access, and it sounded cool. It was giving me that fantasy of the witch pulling the great sword behind her from Pee Wee 1. I don't know what she looks like in Pee Wee 2 with the mace. I think they all have the same animation, but that's the vibe I was getting from it. And I was like, oh, yes, the first truly off-meta thing that someone's trying. I love it. I can't wait for that. It's going to be very cool.
Yeah, that is cool. That is really awesome idea.
Yeah, I got to ask for a video on it. I need to take a look to see what it looks like. All right, man, we have been talking. Holy crap, I thought it was an hour. An hour 20.
Yap on a lot, don't I? You should see how long my videos are before I edit them down.
Well, I am not editing anything out, man. We stalled while you were getting your notes, so there's no need to edit anything out. The only thing I might edit into the front is the greeting, which totally needs to be at the front of the video. We might just play through it twice, keep the original version in two. But I wanted to ask...
Well, grab yourself a drink. It is time for some Path of Exile 2 discussion.
There you go. We'll just have it three times then. I'll put that at the beginning instead. That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. I wanted to ask you one more thing to close out the chat, Sir Gog. So you've been playing Path of Exile 1 for quite a while. You've gone to at least one of the Exile Cons. Did you make it to Exile Con 2?
No, I only made it to 2019.
Okay, 2019. I was curious, could you share with everybody watching, whether in the live chat or on the VOD, one of your favorite Path of Exile moments, in-game or out-of-game?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of one. I did write a couple down from your suggestions, but I think it would be learning one of the bosses, and it would be failing and failing and failing and then eventually getting over the line. I feel like the actual high point is probably 3.17 release day, the Black Star. Went into it completely no knowledge of how the fight works. That is a chaotic fight, and I was on a late blooming character, and so I didn't have very much character power. And I think when I actually did succeed in beating the fight, I think it took like maybe 8 or 9 astral avalanches that give you a bit of a sense of the length of the fight.
Whoa.
And it was just so much fun to just try and work out everything about that fight. Now, the more efficient thing would have been to power up my character a little bit more first, go get another 2 gem levels, go get a 6 link, you know, all those sorts of things. But I was like, no, this does not feel unbeatable. And so I just kept going, all right, I'm going to try it again. I'm going to try it again. I'm going to try it again. And I think I 6 portal failed 7 attempts at it and then got it on the 8th. And that's like being the tier 11 one, all you need to do is just do another tier 11 map to get another try. That was probably my high point. Other real high points have been close, though. Jemunra in the Abomination in Act 2. Lots of failures on that. Viper Napa... Is it Napatazi? Viper Napawazi? Anyway, yeah, 3.
Yeah, I don't know.
In PoE 2 was another PoE 2 high point. And Uber Elder in PoE 1 was another real high point as well.
Learning Did you beat that. Uber Elder in Bestiary when he first came out?
No, I didn't until Synthesis.
Synthesis, okay. That probably felt really darn good then, because that fight is... I mean, you understand both unique fights so well, but then going in and combining them, it just just feels so different, man. I don't know how else to describe it. When I beat that for the first, it's so hype. It's so hype.
It's such a well-designed encounter because, like, you can see that there are mechanics that the Shaper doesn't use, in particular the Shaper, because he's the more dangerous of the two bosses.
Oh, yeah.
There's mechanics he doesn't use in the Uber Elder fight because they wouldn't be fair there, like Bullet Hell. And then, obviously, Bullet Hell is in Uber Elder, but it's a nerf Bullet Hell in Uber Elder.
Yeah. I wonder, when they were designing those fights, do you think that they designed them initially to play with each other, or do you think that was an idea that they had when designing Bestiary and they're like, oh my gosh, you know what we should do? Put the Elder and the Shaper in the same arena. We should do that. Do you think they were thinking about that while designing them, or no?
I think they designed the Elder that way. Less certain about the Shaper, but Elder, they definitely were like, yep, we're going to design this with that fight in mind, because remember, it only came out a league later.
Yeah, one league later. And he has all of his abilities in the Uber Elder fight, right? You missing anything?
I think so. No, he doesn't have his... He doesn't have the one that sharply constrains your movement until the Shaper appears and lets you free of it.
Right. Man, what a fight. I can't wait for that time in Path of Exile 2 where we're getting those end game fights every league. Oh my gosh, dude. That's going to be crazy. Oh, I lied. One more question, Gog. Do you think that there is ever going to be that Legendary 4.0, because I remember the first time I watched your videos, you were doing, it was like the vertical phone screen at ExileCon. You were like, howdy everybody, you know, we're here at ExileCon, we're waiting for 4.0 announcement. It's very hype, very excited. And I was like, what the hell is 4.0? I just started playing this game. What are these version numbers? What's going on? Do you think that's ever going to happen in Path of Exile 1? And if so, what is going to be the stamp on it? Like, this is 4.0 Exiles. This is why we're calling it PUE 1 4.0.
See, I feel they actually should have done it already.
They should have. I totally like agree.
3.17 definitely should have been 4.0 if it hadn't happened already. 3.13 could have been 4.0. 3.9 definitely could have been 4.0. Now, I understand why 3.9 wasn't. That at that point, like, they had to keep everything secret for Path of Exile 2.
Yeah.
So they were still calling it 4.0 at that point. And also they hadn't decided that Path of Exile 2 would be its own game. I don't know when that decision was made, but it feels like it might have been around 3.17 or so. So,
that's correct.
Yeah, like, I think that the fact that they didn't make that decision is the only reason we haven't had it yet. And as for when, like, I wouldn't be shocked if we don't get a 3.26, if we get a 4.0.
Really?
And that is, like, has a bunch of extra endgame content, but I also wouldn't be shocked if we don't. Like, so.
Are you on the forever in the 3.0 era of Path of Exile 2 train? Or Path of Exile 1? Shoot, I don't know what I'm saying anymore, man. It's too late here.
Yeah. Like, I feel like they could, I feel like if the next time they want to make any significant changes to the Atlas in POE1, they could call it 4.0.
Okay.
Especially given that now I don't think POE1 is attracting all that many new players. So gloss ups of the earlier parts of the game aren't as important. Whereas like 3.0 was called 3.0 because it was the transformation from beat Axe 1 to 3, then do it again on Cruel, then do it again on Merciless. Sorry, it was 1 to 4 at that point. Beat Axe 1 to 4 on Normal, then Cruel, then Merciless. And then it became just beat the 10 Axe instead. That was a massive gloss up of the middle and end of the campaign. And then 4.0 doesn't need to be a gloss up. The campaign's not in a great state in Path of Exile 1, but it's also not something that is in a terrible state either, in the same way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it surely will be curious to see what happens with PUE1, PUE2, especially when it goes into 1.0. I think the future is pretty bright. I think they are coming back from their long holiday break after playing Path of Exile 2, watching all of us play Path of Exile 2, ready to get to work on both titles for the rest of 2025. Sir Gog, it's been awesome chatting with you. Do you have anything else to say to the chat watching us now or anybody on the VOD watching the next few days and weeks?
Just a quick poll as to whether you like a particular idea or not. what would people think about itemizable drop anywhere unique maps, kind of like what we have in PoE 1, that just drop randomly from monsters throughout endgame in PoE 2 and that can then be activated in a realm game? People think that's a good idea or a terrible idea?
I think that sounds cool. How many unique maps have you found so far, Gog?
I've found, the only one I've found is the Arbiter's Fortress, I think. Which is going to annoy a lot of people because, like, I got the Arbiter's Fortress. So it would have been only, I think it was only 8 maps to path to from the origin, but it wasn't visible until I found a tower.
Interesting.
And it wasn't the first tower I went to.
Interesting. And you're getting W's in the chat on YouTube and Twitch. So looks like we're good. I found the merchant once. What's the Nameless Seer?
Yeah. Lameness Seer.
The Lameness Seer. What the heck, man? I had triple of the same unique in his shop. And the rolls were not even that. There was no variance in the roll. It was some body armor. What the heck? It was Bramblejack. Yeah. Which has no level requirement in PoE 2 because it sucks. It's terrible, okay? Just, I'm not going to wear it. The armor on it is crap, dude. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think that'd be a cool idea. Maybe there aren't that many that exist. Like, is it only Untainted Paradise? The Nameless Seer? Is there anything?
I'm not aware of others. There probably are others, but yeah.
Chat, tell us if there's others. I have no idea. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your time. Sorry for going over the hour mark. We were both yapping away, but I think it was good.
As I say, I can yap on forever, so...
You're totally good, dude. I love yapping.
As long as your viewers aren't saying, get this guy off already.
Dude, everybody was looking forward to you, man. No, 100%. We have more people on Twitch watching you than we had Crip. So just saying, Gog, you know? I hyped you up. And I think it's paid off.
I wasn't expected.
No, it's pretty cool though, right? All right, man. Thank you so much. Everybody watching right now on YouTube, on Twitch, make sure you go check out Sir Gog's YouTube channel and Twitch channel. He puts out excellent content. I consume it every single time it comes out, and you should as well. Everyone who made it this far into the video, make sure you subscribe to my channel as well and like the video to spread it to more people in the algorithm. Thank you so much for watching, and I will see you in the next podcast, everyone.